Thanks for listening to the Best of Coast to Coast podcast. Become a Coast Insider to hear the rest of this fascinating conversation and check out recent shows where we learned about scientific efforts to revive the woolly mammoth, the latest in military drone technology, and the mysterious Shroud of Turin. And you can listen to those programs and many more amazing Coast shows by heading over to coasttocoastam.com and signing up for Coast Insider.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
For some people who may be brand new to the program, they might be younger people who might not be aware of what the Dead Sea Scrolls might be, Ken, kind of explain to us what they are, who were the authors, and what they mean.
Well, we've got to go back to the year 1947, just 2 years after the end of World War II. The location is the lowest spot on the face of the earth. We're talking about the Great Jordan River Rift Valley, more than 1,200 feet below the level of the Mediterranean Sea. It's the lowest spot on earth. It's a moonscape out there. And right in the middle of that moonscape is this sea. It's actually an enormous lake of salt. We call it the Dead Sea. It's seven times saltier than ocean water. Nothing lives there. It's dead. And this moonscape all around about, there's just a few desert shrubs and bushes. There are some flocks of sheep and goats, and of course the Bedouin tribesmen who tend their flocks up and down across the western shore of the Dead Sea. Well, one afternoon, this Bedouin shepherd lad, his name was Muhammad, discovered that one of his sheep was missing, and he starts looking along the western shore of the Dead Sea, sticks his head into every nook and cranny. He starts throwing stones into this series of lonely desert caves up in these chalky marl cliffs that pockmark literally the western shore of the Dead Sea, thinking, well, if my goat has gone astray, if I throw these stones into the caves, it'll frighten the animal out into the open. And he hears nothing except something sounds like it's breaking inside, like breaking pottery. And he crawls his way through that narrow cave entrance halfway up the side of a cliff and discovers this whole series of earthenware clay pottery jars leaning up against the cave wall. And they'd been there for 2,000 years. And he begins to pry open these jars and discovers this big bundle of something inside. He doesn't know what it is, hauls it out of the jar, takes it back to his Bedouin campsite, and they're greeted by these series of ancient parchments on this leathery material. Again, they have no idea what they are, but they've discovered the first of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're written by an ancient Judean sect 2,000 years ago, back in the days of Jesus and before, written in ancient Hebrew. And that's just the beginning of the story that brings them to the United States and then back to the state of Israel. And not only do we have a series of more or less complete parchment scrolls, uncannily preserved beginning to end, that give us the oldest copies of the Hebrew Bible known to exist in all the world, but there are literally hundreds of additional texts. And by the way, there begins a mad dash after the initial discovery to comb every cave in that entire vicinity, that entire region. And who can get there first, the archaeologists or the Bedouin? And the Bedouin come upon one very important cave in particular. They called it cave number four. Mm-hmm. The Bedouin found what amounted to just piles and piles of fragments, parchment fragments. Now, our friend Muhammad, the Bedouin, found more or less intact scrolls, complete and entire, inside these jars. But in this one cave, they were buried in the floor for some reason. These original scrolls just rolled out flat in stacks, piled on top of one another, and then covered over with sand and debris, and left there for 2,000 years. And some water seeped in, and then you've got bat droppings, and worms got at it. So in the end, it's tens and tens of thousands of teeny tiny pieces, some no bigger than a postage stamp or a thumbnail. And the Bedouin get to it first. And they begin just pulling this stuff out in big handsful, into their burlap sacks. What a catastrophe. Huh. It's not the way you approach the most important artifacts in the world, right? But eventually, the government of Jordan pays them for every square inch of parchment that they will turn in. And thousands of fragments start pouring into the Jordanians, who assemble them in the basement of an East Jerusalem museum. And now geopolitics gets all involved, right? Because Jerusalem is a divided city, and there's a war about to break out, and the east half is in Arab hands, and the west half is in Jewish hands. There's an East Jerusalem museum called the Rockefeller. And these thousands of fragments end up in the basement of that museum and sequestered for some 40 years.
Wow.
And only a select handful of scholars is allowed access to them. What a story. And then all the scuttlebutt and all of the speculation, what could be in there? What are you hiding in there? And eventually, it all begins to come out. Of course, it's the world's biggest jigsaw puzzle, because the Bedouin, as I mentioned, they just grabbed this stuff in big handfuls without any care to exactly where they were found in the floor of that cave. But they represent some 900 documents, what at one time had been complete texts. And we're talking not about just Bible, but entire books unknown to the world until the mid-20th century. And now we have fragments. And now, how do you piece them together?
And let me ask you this, Ken, because the King James Bible, the version that we all know, came out around 1611. These were found in 1947.
Yep.
Were they different from what the Bible was at that time?
Well, we've got entire portions of the Bible, some entire scrolls. For example, the Isaiah scroll gives us the complete scroll, the complete book of Isaiah, like in the King James Bible. Of course, this is the original Hebrew. So now we compare the original Hebrew with texts that we've had all along. King James, of course, is a translation from earlier texts, from the Latin Vulgate and from the Greek Septuagint, and of course the traditional Hebrew Bible that we find today in synagogues. But now we've got texts of the Bible that predate the previous oldest text of the Bible in any language by not a century or two or three or four, but 1,000 years older in the original Hebrew. And how does that Hebrew compare with what has come down to us, say, in synagogues today?
Right.
You pick up the Torah in a synagogue. How does it compare? It's almost identical, word for word.
That is amazing all by itself. It echoes exactly what we always had.
Well, exactly. Exactly. There are minor differences here and there, and that is a study in itself, believe me, because when we do find differences, they're amazing, they're fantastic. But by and large, this is an incredible validation of the biblical text.
Were the scrolls written from word to mouth, handed down over the eons, or might it be the work of a creative writer at the time?
There were apparently a series of writers, creative writers, if you will, and they literally wrote this. Now, how the content came down is another question. Apparently, the ancient sect who composed these, we call them the Essenes most likely, but even that's in debate. There was a sect out on the shore of the Dead Sea 2 millennia ago, a select group of individuals, maybe a few hundred, not more, who lived out in a place called Kirbet Qumran, right on the western shore of the Dead Sea. I've been there many times. And they had their deliberative councils. They had their own sense of government, in fact, to govern and to rule the members of the sect. And they compose, a lot of it oral, entire rule books, manuals of their own, not to mention commentaries on the Bible and additional books, again, that are not in the Bible, that we didn't even know existed. Books like the Manual of Discipline and the Damascus Rule. We never heard of these before. And they wrote them down. Individual scribes wrote them down. In some cases, we think a leader, perhaps the supreme leader of the sect at any given time, actually wrote this stuff down on parchment material. vellum. It's the skin of kosher animals. And then they rolled them up into scrolls, protected them very carefully, and deposited them ultimately in those caves.
Now, do the scrolls basically talk about the beginning of time, as the book of Genesis would point out?
They talk about everything. Yes, they talk about the beginning of time. They have specific commentary about how it all came about. They also seem to dwell very much on angels, on interdimensional beings, let's call them, interdimensional entities. For example, they preserved other texts that were apparently popular in the ancient land of Israel. Maybe you've heard of the Book of Enoch or the Book of Jubilees. These books are not in our Bibles, but they were very popular in ancient Israel. And wouldn't you know, these ancient sectarians preserved those texts. And we've got fragments of them also among the Dead Sea Scrolls, the oldest copies of Enoch, of Jubilees, in all the world. I mention it because those books also seem to dwell and focus on supernatural entities, on the beginning of time. And both of them introduce a solar calendar, which is unbelievable because Judaism is all about a lunar calendar. But we're told that the angels, we believe the angel of the presence, of the divine presence, we're told, dictated this Jubilee calendar to none other than Moses. And that's what we find in the book of Jubilees.
Do they talk about Satan?
Oh, my, yes. And they dwell also on light and darkness, good and evil. I tell people, if you want to understand the mentality of the Dead Sea Scrolls, go watch Star Wars. That's it.
Huh.
In a nutshell, I mean, you've got the Force, you've got the dark side, you've got Darth Vader out there. And maybe a little bit of Tolkien imagery as well. How about Sauron, right? Satan is the adversary or the enemy in the Hebrew language. And yes, there's great combat. There's a great war between the sons of light, who apparently are the members of this secret society, versus the sons of darkness at the end of the age. So at the same time, they're fascinated by the beginning of all things, but they're also completely fascinated by the end of days. We have an entire Dead Sea Scroll called the War Scroll, or the War Between the Sons of Light and the Sons of Darkness. It sounds eerily like a certain New Testament book, the Book of Revelation, of course. It describes a series of seven great battles at the very end of the age. Three will be won by the sons of light, three will be won by the sons of darkness, and the final battle will be won by the Almighty with an army of angels who will descend at the very last hour and win it for the good guys, the Force, if you will.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.